I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex. Welcome back to On Air. Dan, I have so many questions. It is at least my perception that since we last spoke, you have been just about everywhere. So I have no idea where you are right now. And also, I'm confused as to where you have been since we last spoke because, well, let's hear it. Where are you for a start and how are you, of course?
I am in Thailand with the most amazing panoramic view of Bangkok. I just had some amazing Thai food, so I don't think I could be any more happy than I am right now. How are you?
Oh, I love Thai food so much, but not least the Thai food in Bangkok. I'm good. All is well. You have just spent quite a bit of time in South Korea, much of that overlooking North Korea, right? Because I was just flicking through your stories before we came on air and realizing that this is the first time I've ever seen this view of the DMZ, the kind of demilitarized zone between South and North Korea, from this perspective before, because I see people that go there and take the same kind of pictures. And then I read the context and you were writing about how actually it's just opened. It used to be a military observatory and now it's open for the public and there you are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to brag, but we hosted 15 viewers on the best trip ever. Oscar did most of the planning and we found so many unique, cool things to do. The day after we went to the DMZ, we spent the whole morning with a North Korean defector. We spent hours talking about her life, how she fled at 14 to China and was, she has the most heartbreaking story, but eventually she managed to bring her mother, her sister, her father, and her grandma to South Korea over years and years. So just so many incredible experiences. And we had such a blast with some podcast listeners who are on the trip. The funny thing was, a few people told me they listened to the podcast, but I never connected quite. Like when we get a Q&A question from someone, I don't, like if I meet them in person, I don't usually connect. Oh, so you're the Tom who asked this question.
Yeah, like Tom 5328.
Exactly. So okay. The very last day, we're with this guy and we sent you a voice message. So Marco has asked multiple questions on the podcast, was on our trip. And in the end, he goes, something came up about France. And he's like, oh, are you going to Toulouse? And I'm like, no. He's like, oh, you know, the south of France. And I'm like, you.
So you sent me this. Hold on. Couple of things. Firstly, you were on a group trip with some of our listeners, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Can I ask where your co-host's invitation was for this group trip? Because I looked at this photo and I was like, and you were like, here we are with all the listeners of On Air on this, like, you know, holiday. And I looked and I was like, wait, should I be there? Isn't this my podcast that the listeners? I was like, and then, of course, because you were totally drunk on, I don't know, power and authority and everything, you sent this voice note where you were like, hi Alex, I'm with a listener, and he said to me, the listener Marco, he said, you know, Toulouse is not in the south of France. And I was like, waking up to this message, like, what is this guy, what is he trying to do? Like, Dan is trying to ambush, of course, but also, you know. So then I go to Instagram and I have a DM from Marco, who we mentioned, and he says, Dan held me at gunpoint earlier today, by the way.
No, he did not.
Yeah, Dan, he did. You know what? And unfortunately, this is where it would have been handy if we were recording in vision. This is the sound of the screenshot. And this is the sound of me sending that over to you right now. Okay?
Oh my God. If Marco actually said that, I will be so disappointed because he was telling me, you know, after you guys kept talking about Toulouse and whether or not it's in the south of France, I looked it up and I realized Toulouse is not in the south of France. And I said, yes, thank you, Marco. Let's please tell Alex. But
no, he told me, he said in the voice note, which when you have the gun to his head, he said, I've just seen a different map for the first time. Something like that. And I was like, of course, Dan, you're going to these innocent civilians with your altered, doctored maps of the world. This kind of skewed vision that has Gothenburg right in the middle of it all, I'm sure. And it's like the way he said to me, I saw a map that I've never seen before and I can confirm, blah, blah, blah. Which is obviously interesting because it is true. On the whole, that our idea of what the world looks like based on a 2D map that we open up in an atlas when we go to school and whatever is not truly representative of what the world looks like. Some countries appear much smaller than they are, larger, blah, 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 east to west, everything. But the fact that he came to me telling me that his point was proven because you have shown him some weird skewed map. I mean, I, you know, every time I think you can't go lower, you just surprised me.
Oh my God. Let's leave this topic for now because we're never going to agree. And let's also talk about one really cool guy who was, I mean, everyone was really cool on the trip. So many people love Finnair on the trip, which, you know, some, oh my God, I forget who, but someone said, I can't say Finnair now. I can only say Finnair because that's how we say it. So I was like, okay, love that. But
that's
then
funny.
There was a guy called Ionut from Romania who lives in a rural village of 140 people in northwest Iceland. He works for Icelandair. And up there, it's actually fascinating because up in this little remote village, he has two flights a day, 30 minutes from his house, on a -8 200 from Icelandair to Reykjavik City, not to Keflavik. And the first of all, the approach up there is absolutely incredible, but it made me think about, to me, I always was like, oh my God, Gothenburg is such a poorly connected, horrible place to live. I can't stand this. Then I consider his life for a second. It took him 3 days to get home from Korea. I'm like, oh, okay. That puts it into perspective.
That makes you feel better now, does it?
It does. I'm like, oh wow, I can get to Korea in one connection. Okay, I'm happy now.
Wow. Yeah. Wait, one connection? Germany, right?
Well
anyway,
Helsinki,
Paris.
Of course.
Yeah. Helsinki.
Yeah, there's tons. Okay, there's tons.
True. There's tons. Okay.
London. But the fact that up there in Northern Iceland, the weather is often so unreliable. So he told me that everyone who lives there has to book, their only option is to fly Icelandair, because if they book a flight from up where he lives down to Reykjavik, it can, you know, he said like one out of three times the flight is canceled. So if you book that ticket and then you book any other airline from Keflavik out into the world, but your first flight is canceled, you're screwed. So your only choice is to book it on the same ticket so you're protected, which I'm just like, wow, that sounds like too much anxiety for me, but there you go.
Well, you are looking for a place to go and settle down, aren't you, in the future?
I think you would like me being in as remote a place as possible, so I can't
ambush you. I think I like the idea of you being 3 days away from any major hub, weather permitting, of course.
Yeah, exactly. But
that's true.
To be fair, we had this discussion about Toulouse as well, that considering this is where most of the planes we fly are made, it is agonizingly poorly connected, right?
Yeah, it's such a schlep to try to get there without the direct flights. And one of my closest friends, he just went to his graduation in Toulouse, where he's graduated in aviation law, and he used to fly on the direct flight between Doha and Toulouse, you know, super easy door-to-door game changer completely. Now that doesn't even exist for the foreseeable. And so he did the, you know, the old way via Paris and then coming back the same thing. And it just takes forever because the connections are not even optimized. You know, they're not even optimized in terms of being able to, and there's a massive gap. And I've also got friends who work at Airbus who are currently on a Korea and Japan trip. And when they did their layover in London, their layover was like 7.5 hours. You know, wow. That's before the big trip even starts, where they then had to go from London to Doha to Seoul and then Seoul to Tokyo and all the way back. So it's crazy that the tiring part of the journey, what she was telling me, was going to be just that last flight or the first flight, you know, to from Toulouse. And my friend Ali just had the same experience. He literally went for a day to go and to attend his graduation, and he flew overnight Doha to Paris and then Paris down to Toulouse, appeared at the graduation, and then Paris back up to Toulouse, and then Toulouse back up to Paris, and then Paris to Doha. And it's like, that's a trek when you had the beauty of nonstop just a matter of weeks ago. You know,
the older I get, not that we're old or anything, but the older I get, the more I come to appreciate the value of direct flights, because I grew up connecting all the time. My life now is just hopping around the world, connecting from one flight to another to take videos. So I'm still so not used to the idea that you can just get on one plane and get off at your destination. But it's truly... So just to give an example, I flew all around East Asia over the past 2 days, but Oscar flew from Seoul to Bangkok, but I wanted him to come with me in the beginning. So I booked him for $800 China Airlines, Seoul to Taipei overnight, Taipei to Bangkok in business. Direct flights on Korean Air, Asiana, and Thai from Seoul to Bangkok were $1,000, $200 more. So yeah, it's a bit more, but if I wasn't taking that flight, it is such a no-brainer for every reason to spend that little bit extra and fly direct, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's just, you know, the value of time, right?
Yeah, and for me, the how much less stress it is to just get on one plane and know when I land, hopefully, if there's no diversions or whatever.
But I think you appreciate it even more because of your upbringing and the fact that you basically had to connect absolutely everywhere before it was mainstream. I mean, you were doing the connections before Lufthansa centered their entire business model.
Before the hub and spoke model existed.
Before the hub and spoke model existed. You were hub and spoking in places that there ain't any hub and spokes to be had. You know, you were having to do that through your childhood. Because I remember when we were really young, you know, I didn't connect much anywhere at all because, you know, London, you can fly everywhere direct. That was always
rub it in.
Yeah, that was the thing. Well, I want to hear more about what's been happening in Korea. I know you've flown some interesting airlines, and I know that also you are there at a time that there's quite a bit of change, but I'm interested to hear how things have, or what you've heard has been progressing since I was last there, which was in May this year, and you now there in October, specifically about the fact that the two largest airlines in South Korea are going to merge. So this is Korean Air and Asiana. And when you land at Seoul and you see just kind of... how many aircraft each airline have and they're on the ground at one time, and you think, well, most of the fleet is airborne right now. So you begin to understand the magnitude and the you know, just how huge it is that these two massive airlines are supposedly going to be blended into one. What are you hearing? What are the developments since I was last there about how this is going? Are we a step closer?
It is... probably the slowest merger we have witnessed in a long time, which is good for Star Alliance flyers. Obviously, they get to keep Asiana a bit longer. But Korea is a fascinating aviation market because if you just look at the number of airlines that operate in South Korea, it is It's incredible. So I'm looking at a list here. Just in the tiny, geographically tiny country of South Korea, we have Aero-K is an airline, Air Busan, yeah. Air Premia, which does long-haul flights, Air Seoul, Asiana, of course, EasterJet, Jeju Air, Jin Air, which also does long-haul flights, Korean Air, and then Tiwei Air, which is an airline that I don't think most people in the West have heard about. But if you were searching flights this summer between Europe and East Asia, you might have come across something quite unusual, which is fares that are unlike anything we have ever seen, especially in this era of war and lack of access to Russian airspace. There have been business class fares for less than $1,000 each way on 14, 15-hour flights between Korea and between Europe. What does this come down to? A newcomer in the long-haul market, which is Tiwei Air, that has been operating since 2004. They're quite a big, well-known, low-cost airline in Korea. But yeah, now they're starting to expand. And there was some interesting news that we saw earlier this week, right? Do you just want to tell us the headline and then I can dive in a bit more?
Yeah, so Tiwei, and I never knew because of the, it's kind of T apostrophe way, yeah. Isn't it? So that's yeah. So I was like, is it Tway? Is it? But Tiwei, from our understanding, we are correct by pronouncing it, are going to take 777s. So they will become an airline that has the wide body aircraft, adding to the, as you say, vast portfolio of South Korean airlines. And many of the airlines that you had listed out there are designated as low-cost carriers, and Tiwei is one of them. But what's interesting is that the expansion that they will be able to unlock by having 777s, including an expansion into Europe, is still part of the organization of the plan led by the government to ensure that competition will continue to be able to exist when that deal finally goes through and the two largest full-service carriers, Korean Air and Asiana, merge. So this is not really an independent decision, but one that they have kind of been directed towards in order to ensure that there isn't this great big monopoly on one prominent legacy Korean carrier, which is the merger of Korean and Asiana, like we've seen in other markets where then the other airlines struggle. Like, for example, the dominance of Qantas in Australia, the dominance of Air Canada over in Canada, and so on.
Yeah, it's an incredibly difficult situation, just considering that it's a good situation for passengers to have two huge airlines competing head to head. So Asiana has been struggling financially, and the fact that Korean Air is able to step in to save them and merging them into the airline is a good thing, in the sense that we'll see a much bigger South Korean airline now that continues to offer the levels of capacity as a whole that we've seen before. But there is no competitor, nothing that comes close to that merged airline. So to me, it's kind of funny and a bit random that Tiwei has been chosen as the competitor that's going to arise to these airlines, considering, as you said, it's a low-cost airline. It has a completely different business model. I flew them last year from Seoul to Bangkok on their A330-300, which is the exact same sort of style as Air Asia X. A great value for money, but nothing comparable to Korean Air or Asiana. They also have A330-900neos, 5 on order. But now, yeah, as you're saying, they're going to be receiving a few 777s. And when I saw this a few days ago on aeroroutes.com, which we recommend everyone check out because it is a great website for keeping up to date on airline route changes and schedule changes, stuff like that. They said Tiwei 777-300ER European expansion. And I went, surely there's something wrong with what they've written here. Because first of all, Tiwei doesn't have any 777-300s. No. Second of all, where would they be getting them from? You know, which 777s suit a low-cost airline? But it gets even more confusing because now we found out that the 777s that Tiwei will be acquiring are coming from Cathay Pacific, including a first-class cabin. This is a low-cost airline selling business on 14-hour flights for $1,000. And now they're going to be getting aircraft with four cabins of service that are, you know, more than 50% premium. So yeah, it's an interesting attempt to compete. And as you mentioned, this is the Korean government is actually making Korean airlines give up slots to T-Way to be able to do this. They're trying to encourage it, but I don't see how it's helpful just to encourage it when I don't see any world where this is money-making for them.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Which is that a lot of the South Korean carriers do not make money. That's why Asiana is in this issue in the first place, despite it being one of the most prominent aviation markets as a country, you know, as a whole and collectively together. It is still incredibly fragmented in terms of who is able to turn a profit and who is not. I met with the Korean transport minister in May on my trip there, and I had a conversation with him about how the merger was going. And he, typically when you ask a senior politician a question like this of a project that is pretty high profile, you get a kind of bog standard, you know, it's underway and, you know, there are complexities and blah, blah, blah. He was really real about it. He said to me, and he was speaking mostly in English, but there were times where he turned to his translator to make sure that his exact point was translated across correctly. But he basically put his head in his hands and he said, it's a very, very big headache and it's difficult and there are so many complexities. And it's like, I mean, he was politely telling me it was a complete struggle that they were really trying to every day cope with and overcome, and so many different hurdles, be it regulatory or political hurdles or the complexities of merging two massive powerhouses that operate entirely independently of each other and so on. It's he was very real about that struggle. And towards the end of our conversation, he said that he was hopeful that everything would be, you know, tied up and merge and finalize within the timeline that they have set. But also that he wasn't confident of that because it's just, you know, he said to me, both airlines are beasts when it comes to their prominence in not just South Korea, but across this part of Asia. And so bringing them in line with each other is not an easy thing to do. So yeah, interesting that we're now seeing some evidence of those complexities, like having to strengthen up the low-cost competition.
Yeah, and what I also find so fascinating, I don't understand the world of business mergers. I can't say that, but a big part of the problems that have arisen for Asiana is not only with the Korean government, but with foreign governments. So in 2022, the Ministry of Commerce of China announced that it had approved the merger. Okay, good. But last year, 2023, the U.S. Department of Justice blocked the deal, citing monopoly concerns between Asiana or for the Korean market. So I personally don't understand how the U.S. can go in and block a merger that's trying to happen in South Korea. But
well, from my understanding, yeah. It cannot obviously unilaterally block a merger that's taking place in another market, right, of sovereign territory and its own laws and business practices. So, but what it can do is indicate that it essentially will block the recognition of such a deal or of, you know, it's from my understanding, and I'm willing to be corrected on this, it is more of their position on this rather than anything that they can take as a decision. And therefore, the airline wouldn't risk, for example, not being able to fly into the US because the US had made it quite clear that it doesn't recognize such a merger and it doesn't think it's in the interest of consumers and blah, blah, blah. I mean, US telling everyone else how it's, you know, how it's supposed to be done. What else is new? They're doing it in every other area of society.
Exactly.
And now here. But I do, on one side, think we should appreciate that the reason, for example, the minister told me that it's just so incredibly complex. The reason why we're seeing the likes of T-Way get the 777s. The reason why this is such a big issue in South Korea is actually because they are all very much aware of the fact that competition must remain, and therefore they don't just want to get this done and tied up and we'll have one big strong carrier. That they're very, very careful about the fact that they want to protect the interest of the consumers. And I think that is something that should be respected as this deal continues to progress.
Yeah, I agree. It will be interesting to see what happens. I will be sad to see. It feels like there will be a bit of a hole there for Star Alliance, but to be fair, they have, Air China over in Beijing, then they have ANA over in Japan. So it's not exactly a big hole, but yeah, that will be, talk about a SkyTeam fortress in Korea once all this is said and done.
Yeah, Seoul, the new SkyTeam fortress.
Yeah, exactly.
As declared on air with Dan and Alex.
Coming soon. Yeah.
Speaking SAS of, coming soon.
Yeah, speaking of SAS, actually, nice segue, Dan. they have announced that they are also following, well, I don't think they're following United's footsteps, but just shortly after we had the interesting news that United plans to launch a new route between New York, Newark, and Nuuk, Greenland, SAS has hopped on the bandwagon as well and announced they're going to launch 3 weekly flights next summer. This makes a bit more sense in a way than the United expansion, but I just have to comment here that based on the buzz I was hearing on my group trip, even there are multiple people who came on our trip who said, oh, I'm 100% going to take that flight next summer. One of the guys, Grant, he's turning 40 next year. So he said he and his husband guaranteed are going to go to Greenland on this flight. So I was like, well, great. There we have 2 passengers. Now all we need is a few thousand more and the route is a success. But no, in all seriousness, it's I think it's just a very interesting thing to see how announcing such unexpected routes, almost it's like the Ryanair effect in reverse, where you introduce a flight that gets so much attention that people are like, okay, now I'm going to take it, even though the demand wasn't there before.
Well, look, when we discussed it, we were like, okay, I think we have to try one of these, right? Just in terms of it being a novelty. It's like a White Lotus effect. Maybe the next White Lotus after the one that's going to be in Thailand, where you are now, is going to be Nuuk, Greenland, after they've seen United flock there and now SAS. Followed by all these listeners of the podcast and listeners of whatever and, and everyone online, because I keep seeing it everywhere. People keep sending it to me. Like, I think because, people keep sending, knowing that the novelty nature of being able to fly to Greenland rather than, because Iceland is kind of, people know about it now. Yeah. People have done that. And I feel like that once upon a time was a bit of a, the Northern Lights trip. Well, now you can see the Northern Lights in England most evenings. It's really become a thing. You open up Instagram, you see, it's just more Northern Lights over Southwest London. Next,
Who needs Northern Finland?
Yeah. Seriously, I genuinely wonder if this is going to impact,
tourism.
If there's going to be a reduction of Northern Lights trips, because now you only have to be kind of in line everywhere from Montreal right across to, Ireland, the UK, and then, of course, everywhere else, Scandinavia, but lower.
Even gets it.
Hamburg. What did you say? Sorry?
New York City got it sometime.
Yeah. Well, imagine for all the light pollution there and you can still see it. I mean, save your dollar and go to, Nuuk instead, something like that. Go on.
No, I just wanted to, I can't believe after 57 episodes, we've never really discussed the phenomenon that is the Ryanair effect. Do you know what I'm referring to?
You're referring to the way in which the CEO says crazy things, or they announce things that make people say, what? And therefore they have to spend almost zero on marketing because it does it all for them.
Well, okay, that's not quite what I was referring to.
Okay, maybe I'm getting my hands wrong
because I'm exhausted, but it's the concept of Ryanair has a billion bizarre routes throughout Europe that
don't make any sense.
Exactly. Right. But the idea is that just by entering a market, Ryanair is creating demand because of its low prices. So people... there's always a market of people who don't care where they go. They just want to go somewhere, anywhere. And Ryanair, by popping up and being like, hey, here's a 10 euro flight to this place you've never heard of before. They create so much more demand that was never there before they enter the market, which is, I think, such a cool part of Ryanair and their contribution to Europe. Because I mean, the way that Swedish people travel to Poland, I think, has been astronomically increased because of Ryanair. And that includes the places they choose to visit. Ryanair and, you know, Sweden, Gothenburg and Ryanair flights to Poland seem to go hand in hand.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. They've never been one to only make their move if there is a solid example of the, you know, demand and the traffic and whatever. As you say, the strategy for them has always been, we rock up, we offer 10 euro fares, and we know that the flight will be almost full.
Because
many people are willing to go anywhere for 10 euros.
Exactly. And by the way, random other tangent on the topic of Ryanair. Let's see. So they have 410 777s. I wish.
Goodness me. Can you imagine? There'd be about 800 passengers on each aircraft.
No, they have 410 737-800s. But I am shocked to see this. They already have 170 737 MAX 8200s. 170. I feel like it was yesterday they got their first.
Yeah.
But now it's like, you know, a third of their fleet are the maxes. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's because in that sense, they're quiet about things, right? Ryanair are quieter about the things that other airlines make noise about, not least because the CEO didn't want to draw attention to the fact that they were going to be such a big 737 MAX customer at a time where the 737 MAX was a household name for all of the wrong reasons, right? So in that sense, they're quieter about things. And then they're really loud on, you know, having the CEO hint again that you're going to have to pay to use the lavatory. And it's like it goes everywhere and it's featured on daytime talk shows and every, you know, Mail Online headline. It's like, guys, you're falling for it every single time. And he's also great at getting what he wants, Michael O'Leary, the CEO, from the manufacturers and from Boeing, his sole manufacturer, really, because time and time again, and I sent you this link and I said, we're not discussing this because it's always, you know, Bloomberg led with a headline, Ryanair CEO Michael O'Leary warns of a reduced schedule next year due to Boeing crisis and Boeing delays. Well, you can type in that headline and see that that headline has been generated year in, year out, crisis or no crisis. It's the same thing. Anything that, you know, the big boys, Airbus and Boeing, are so vulnerable to external influences and the slightest bit of, you know, supply chain issues, conflict, geopolitics, elections, blah, 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 can impact whether or not they're able to meet certain deadlines. And the moment they are not able to meet certain deadlines, let's just say it slips a little bit, which is common, he does not waste his opportunity to inform the market that these guys are in crisis. And as a result, I'm going to have to reduce my schedule next year. And as a result, you're going to have to pay more. So he starts planting the seeds early on that if fares are, let's say, 14 euros instead of 10 euros next year on some of his routes, it's because of what happened 6 months ago when Boeing couldn't get their blood together or Airbus were unable to commit to XYZ.
Yeah.
And both suppliers are kind of struggling with this. We were just talking, weren't we, before we came on air about Emirates A350 slipping in terms of the delivery dates. That's now been pushed to January. It's kind of common early on in the A350 program that the first lot of A350s were not making the delivery deadlines that they had anticipated and were constantly slipping by a month or two. Then they really got their act together and things have been pretty stable throughout most of the deliveries. And now there is some issues once again, and airlines are struggling to get aircraft from both suppliers, mainly because Airbus and Boeing share so many common suppliers for key components, parts, product, but also it extends to the cabin, for example, and, you know, airlines choosing the same seat and they have delays, and it's all since the staff shortages and the cost cutting that followed COVID and the, you know, the boom and then the fall and everything that we have discussed at length on the pod.
Yes. I, you know, speaking of discussions, let's dive into some more fun Q&A questions that we got from you guys last week, because I think our Am I the A-hole situations last week really inspired a lot of you to send in your situations, which we love. I loved doing that last week, so let's go.
Okay, I have a question here from Ashley. She says, Hi Alex, I want to know just how fast your Starlink Wi-Fi was on the first Qatar Airways flight with Elon Musk's technology. Are we talking at home level kind of fast or fast for an airplane? Thank you. So for context, and I was speaking to you about this when I was connected, Dan, I earlier last week flew on the first Starlink Qatar Airways operated 777. So this is the first aircraft to receive the new Starlink Wi-Fi. The installation was faster than the airline expected. The rollout will be faster. It will be around 14 aircraft by the end of this year. That's just a matter of weeks away. And then the majority of the fleet by the end of next year. That includes all 777s, 350s, the 787s are getting the Wi-Fi. I won't talk too much about it because there's not much to say other than to answer Ashley's question, which is that the Wi-Fi was just perfection. It was the definition of the best Wi-Fi ever. It was 215 megabits per second. To put that into context, that is about 6 times faster than my Wi-Fi at home. And I pay for the premium Wi-Fi package to support things like being able to do the podcast live with Dan. So it was phenomenal. And that opens up, you know, all the opportunities with live sport, streaming, news. I loved it. I was streaming a tennis game on my iPad. I was streaming the news on my laptop. And then I was, you know, working away on another device. It was really, really something quite cool. And now if you want to track the aircraft, the first aircraft that has it, but it'll be three by the end of this month. It's Alpha 7 Bravo Echo Victor. And it's operating across the network currently. It's done London a few times. It's doing a lot of Australia. So if you have any flight, I'll give you a tip actually. If you have any flight over the next 2-3 weeks that is a 777 leaving from gate C19 at Doha's Hamad International Airport, it is a Starlink flight. They're keeping it from the same gate.
Cool.
So let us know if you get lucky and you get a Starlink on the flight. But it was, Ashley, to answer your question, it was absolutely phenomenal. Perfect.
I have a question here. I was excited for Am I the A-hole questions, but now other ones are coming up. I have a question here from Percy says, hi Dan, love your content and the on-air podcast. The repartee between you and Alex never fails to make me laugh. I was wondering how I can submit a question for the podcast. Well, there we go. Here's the question. I'm flying down to Cape Town from Stockholm in November via Doha, and I'm a victim of Qatar's infamous equipment swaps from an A350 to the old 222 business class configuration on the 777. I booked my ticket through Finnair and was never notified of the change. I'm sure you know as well as I do that this is a major downgrade, blah, blah, blah. I would be grateful for any recommendations, anything I ought to do in this situation. Do you think airlines should be held accountable in these situations? And then he brings up the instance we discussed, I don't remember if it was last year, but we have discussed it on the podcast about how Emirates was marketing its A380 business class to New Zealand. While it was sending a 777, and they actually ended up having to pay.
I think he was a lawyer, wasn't he? And he won the case.
Yeah. So in this case, the unfortunate part is booking via Finnair, because if you had booked via Qatar Airways, you should have been able to change that flight for free, right?
Yes, you should have. And that they do have that policy that we've spoken about where when it's operated by another airline at the last minute or when they have to pass you on to another airline, then you are able to have flexibility there in the changes. So yes, that should have been the case.
Yeah, but since it's booked through Finnair, I'm going to say, unfortunately, in this case, there's nothing he can really do. Do you agree?
I do, unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, and also we should say that Qatar doesn't list specific flight numbers ever that are guaranteed to get Q-suite. They also don't say, for example, that Johannesburg is a Q-suite flight. If they did that, I think you would have more basis, but in the terms and conditions, they state there can be an equipment swap. And of course, it's incredibly frustrating, but that's just not how Q Suite works, unfortunately. And hopefully you can enjoy the flight anywhere. At least you get to enjoy Finnair's air lounge on the way to Doha. So that should be
nice. Yes. The air lounge is an interesting concept, definitely. David asks if we think any airlines actually do breakfast well, but he sends this on the back of those announcements that came from British Airways. Just to put things into context, British Airways at the beginning of this year announced, I think, £7 billion worth of investments for a new generation of British Airways. And as we approach the end of the year, it's cut after cut after cut after cut. So they are cutting the route network. For example, Gatwick to New York is no more for the foreseeable because they're struggling to get aircraft from Boeing, along with many other airlines. But this is, I found this bizarre. So did you see this about what they're doing to dinner and breakfast on board?
I did. I complain about BA a bit on the podcast. They do some things well, but why can't we have good things? Why can't an airline just be premium and not just chase a little bit more profit margin? I know it's because there's investors and people want better returns, but come on, you already have Virgin Atlantic, which is struggling financially, but offering so much more, in my opinion, when it comes to the lounge and onboard experience. So now what British Airways is doing is that they're replacing, or they're basically moving breakfast way up into the day. So even if you're going to end up being served your meal around 12 or 1, in the end, you're going to be getting breakfast. Then if you leave in the evening, instead of a real dinner, you're going to be getting a supper, I think, as they call it. All of these are lighter, cheaper meals. You're going from something, you know, a protein-rich multi-course meal to stuff like pancakes or French toast. And it's like people are paying literally $10,000 sometimes for a business class ticket. And you're going to try to save £5 on their meal? Seriously? That's how I
feel. So now that brunch service is going to be introduced to all long-haul flights departing between 8:30 and 11:29 a.m. And as you said,
which is which
is the departure time. So that means that by the time the service begins, for example, let's say you're not having the cart reach you until about 1:30 p.m. you're getting this weird mediocre brunch rather than a solid breakfast or a solid lunch. And it should be lunch on that as you move, you know, forward to the late morning. That's how it's been done before. Also, on the other side of things, they are cutting the business class, the long haul Club World business class meal service for all departures after 9 p.m. I mean, so imagine you've spent $10,000 on a ticket, your flight departs at 9:30 p.m. There shall be no Club World dinner service. Instead, it's a massively
supper,
slimmed down. We want you to sleep. We don't want you to eat. So the appetizers have been scrapped. The main courses and the desserts have been simplified
like
immensely.
Sandwiches, right?
Yeah. So you have, like, for example, the main course is going to be something, a chicken and leek pie. Like, that's it. For example, with cheese and crackers. And then your little tiny salad.
By the way, literally costs like £1.50 at Sainsbury's. That kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's, I mean, this has not gone down very well
Flybase. By the way, let's not forget that British Airways flies daily to Doha. And some people booking a connecting itinerary with Qatar Airways can end up on British Airways instead. So Qatar Airways is serving caviar in business class for the same price that British Airways is serving a £1.50 chicken tart. I don't know. It's
Sainsbury's meal deal, right? For the same value of the ticket. And that's so true. This is, you're talking about premium routes. Okay. So where I just read to you that it will be the chicken and leek pie, and again, it's to encourage you to sleep, that this is not a dinner service in Club World that they had previously had. And there's no choice also. So they're removing the choice. That's what you have. And you have the little tiny side salad all served together with, you know, the bread roll and things. But on the same route, for example, the Doha route where they share with Qatar, if you end up in the same cabin, a business class cabin on Qatar. Let me just quickly read you the menu that I had three nights ago. Okay, starters, caviar, soup of the day, classic Arabic meze, tiger prawns and paprika scallops, main courses. You can choose, and by the way, you can have multiple of them. It's dine on demand anytime, as and when, as much as you want. Grilled black Angus beef filet, Qatari hamour, chicken cordon bleu. You have a risotto. You also can choose, if you would like, in addition to that, a cheese board. You've got three choices of desserts. You have four selections of bread. Then you have all of the snacks. Then you have the light meal choices, such as the pasta or sandwiches or afternoon tea. How are BA thinking they're going to maintain a level with their partners? Even if I read you the American Airlines menu, it would be far more significant in that class of travel than what BA are doing after 9 p.m. So it's a very disappointing development in a year that they have announced so-called $7 billion worth of investments that we're not seeing too much evidence of. And as I say, the BA frequent flyer community are furious online, and we understand that sentiment. Yeah.
Well, even more reason to appreciate that Heathrow has so many good food options. They also have like Huel. That's become my new thing at Heathrow, to grab like a meal replacement bottle of Huel just in case something goes wrong with the in-flight meals. But there's so many good things you can bring, but you shouldn't have to. And it's just, it's very unfortunate that British Airways has the type of power at one of the world's most slot-restricted airports that they can get away with this, and I don't think it will impact their bottom line in terms of demand or people booking away.
People will always continue to fly, you know, because of the way in which they've built up the network and the transit via Heathrow and so on.
And
go on.
I just have to say, I also realized another thing I learned on this group trip, speaking to a Brit that was there. He was like, my family are British Airways people. We only fly British Airways. And I'm like, but have you ever considered trying Virgin Atlantic? Don't you think you might like it a bit more? And I swear he's the type of person who would like it a lot more. He's like, no, we're just BA people. We always fly BA. And there are so many of those people in the UK.
So many of them.
Why?
Yeah. I know. There's so many of them. I meet people all the time. It's like, oh, because I only fly British Airways. And I'm like, is that a badge of honor?
Yeah.
It's just not the flex. In fact, you tell me that, and I think, well, that means you're fine with wasting money on so many routes, you know, because you just have so many different options from London, the hub of every, you know, major airline is flying here. Take advantage of that. When I hear people were going to Singapore with BA, I'm like, what?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
There's routes I understand, and there's routes that I just don't. I've got a message here from Kat.
But wait,
we didn't answer the question. You're right. Do we think any airline does breakfast decent? I think most airlines struggle, but I can't stand the idea of, I don't know, something about eggs on a plane makes me,
Well, I'll say, I just had the best, by far, the best in-flight breakfast I have ever had on JetBlue out of JFK, which sounds like the most bizarre statement ever.
No, but, it doesn't. They've
but
got good
I
catering.
Loved, they served me a delicious, very sweet, which might be why I loved it, a chia pudding with crunchy toppings with a side of coconut yogurt with some like glazed coconut strips on top, some delicious flavorful fruit. It was perfect. It was my idea of a good breakfast. I kind of, avocado toast, we both like. I think it's a good breakfast on the ground, but avocado doesn't really sit well, you know, over time it browns. So I don't think that's a good
avocado
idea.
Avocado is difficult enough on the ground, let alone in a pressurized cabin.
Yeah, so for me, some nice chia pudding, some nice, very tasty coconut yogurt, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That is a good idea for breakfast. And by
that's the breakfast I go for.
Yeah, and by the way, like, airlines need to start serving more dairy alternative yogurts because there are so many people around the world who don't handle dairy well. So they can eat dairy yogurt on the ground, but doing it on a plane when you're going to be sitting down for a long time.
Okay. Don't go any further than that. We know what direction
you're
heading in.
Well, I don't
get
it.
Your point is valid.
The point is there. let's see some more coconut yogurt, guys, or oat yogurt, or whatever you want.
It's people, a very valid point. And the same with oat milk and coconut milk and all the kind of milk alternatives. Before I go to the next question quickly, I noted that Heathrow to Delhi is beginning today with Air Canada. Did you see that?
Oh, it's back again.
Yeah, it's back. The Heathrow to Delhi route. I found this, I mean, I knew, you know, this route is not new, it's resuming, but my God, I couldn't help but think of the uproar had it been anyone else other than a Canadian airline operating between such important markets of Heathrow and Delhi. You know, if, for example, let's say
Emirates.
Kuwait Airways or Emirates, right? Okay, let's say Emirates decided they're going to fly London to Delhi because it's the best utilization for... It would be a national story. We would be seeing about how many jobs this has taken away from hardworking British families. We would be seeing what a threat this is to the local economies in both near to Heathrow, near to Delhi. But because it's Canada, everyone's kind of like, chill about it. No one cares. Nobody cares. And we're saying that from a protectionist point of view, in case you're wondering what we're referring to, which is that there is usually uproar if a foreign carrier with no link to those two destinations is going to operate that on a fifth freedom basis. For example, the National Airline of Canada flying passengers between London and Delhi.
Yeah. And by the way, they could operate nonstop from Toronto or Montreal to Delhi. So they're just choosing to stop in London.
To pick up passengers and to tap into the all-important London market, which is the very reason why many of them, those airlines, including Air Canada, push against the likes of the Asian carriers, the Middle Eastern carriers, because they're absolutely against such business practices of having a foreign carrier swoop in and collect the market between two hubs. But it's okay if it's them. It's one rule for one.
Yeah,
one
it's rule especially for ironic when it's Air Canada of all Canada, airlines.
Literally the protectionist of the protectionists. Yeah. You know, and does anyone want to CC Qantas into that email and check if they're also fine with that? Because the last time I checked there, they stand united against such exploitations of key hubs. But we literally could have led with as the opener, because in aviation, it's just hilarious how those players will be turning a blind eye to something that they dedicate millions into lobbying against.
Yeah, I think at this point, Qantas should just, they fly Sydney, Auckland, New York. I think they should just tack on New York to London on that 787 flight. Why not? No one would object. So, you do you, guys.
We have a question here from Kat. I want to read it because it's directly linked with last week's episode where we mentioned something about dogs, because I think people asked us, didn't they? So she said, "Hi, Alex, my name is Kat and this is my dog's Instagram page." She said, "My husband and I listen to your podcast with Dan religiously, and I recall your last one had some dog chatter that we found very interesting. We just spent 9 days in Rome with our little dog, Lupita. We love to travel and show her the world, and we have experienced quite a variety of travel-related encounters with her that I would be happy to share with anyone interested. We have flown both domestically and internationally with Lupita, and I'm currently sending you this message from 35,000 feet over Italy, in brackets, don't worry, we're in business class, with Lupita on ITA Airways." And then she says, "Hope you are both well. My husband is a points and miles wizard and we love the podcast. Your DC area based fans, Kat and Stephen." Kat and Stephen, thank you for the message. We're thrilled to hear that you two are traveling around the world with your dog. And it plays into kind of that discussion we had as to if it's possible, how it's possible, if we're comfortable with it. And, the idea of it. And I said to you, I would pay if I could see on the seat map that Kat and Steven's dog was going to be sitting next to me.
Yeah.
I would pay to sit there rather than a human.
Mm-hmm. I know. We need more dogs, less humans. yesterday on one of my flights, I haven't gotten into the crazy flights I've been taking the past few days, but we don't need to do that now. Yesterday on one of my flights, I was about to go ballistic. I was so exhausted. And the man... I'm just trying to, mind my own business. But the man across the aisle from me in business fell asleep the second he sat down and was snoring. People talk about crying babies. we need to talk more about snoring old men, because this guy was snoring, so I swear people 10 rows away could hear. Then as soon as we take off, the man behind me starts snoring, but they're not snoring synced. So one of them goes, and as he gets quiet, the one behind me goes, it was like a symphony of snores.
What aircraft were you on?
777-300.
And you mean even the whooshing of a 777-300 couldn't drown that out?
I was behind
out?
The second door, and I still heard it that loudly.
Wow. You know, like, imagine if you were on a 350.
Yeah. No, thanks. Yeah, honestly, we need to talk more about
these important
issues.
Did you have noise-canceling headphones in? Did you use them?
I put them in eventually when I realized the snoring wasn't going to stop. Started playing some music, and then it was a bit better. But I was just like, I can't believe no one is... Of course, I was in East Asia, so no one's going to say anything, but... I was like, this is crazy. Like, how
By the way, I forgot to tell you, I finished the book that you recommended, the thriller, The Housemaid.
Let's end with this.
And when I was on the final few chapters and it gets really, really tense, I'm in the dark in a pitch black cabin in Q Suite, and I'm so engrossed in this book, and I'm reading and reading and reading, and I'm slightly facing at an angle towards the window. And I didn't realize that the crew had started to open my door slightly to check if I wanted anything.
Yeah.
And she, in the pitch black,
oh my God.
In the pitch black, she leant towards me and extended her arm. Her hand just gently tapped my shoulder, and I shouted the most almighty cuss word beginning with F in this dark cabin in the middle of the night. I was, you know, when you're just, you know, you're in it, right? Like that book, it hooks you. And she was, oh my God. So, this is not the first time that has happened. I can be jumpy in that way. But she was like, oh my God, sorry, I'm so sorry. And my heart was racing. I said to her, sorry, I'm reading this. And it's like the key moment of the thriller. And I didn't even notice because it's pitch black. So yeah, that was interesting in case any of my fellow passengers just heard me shout.
Yeah.
F!
Yeah. So in case you guys didn't hear the name, we're talking about the book, The Housemaid. What did you think?
I thought it was great. Real page turner. Nice to read something to mix up my, you know, reading of like history and politics and blah, blah, blah. Nice to read a very, very readable, gripping thriller
it's
a very
just great
easy
entertainment.
Yeah, it is. I actually felt like when I finished reading it that I had just, you know, that feeling when you watch a brilliant Netflix series and you can't wait to tell the next person about it because you keep thinking about it, then you want to read a Reddit thread about it and you want to, you know, whatever. That's that feeling I had, so it was good. I'm going to move on to book two now.
Really?
Your recommendation. Yeah,
okay. Yeah,
have
you guys
read the second book?
We highly recommend it, The Housemaid.
Wait, have you read the second book?
Yeah, I've read it. I'm on my fourth book by this author. I'm saving the third book in that series for next week. And I was just at Singapore Changi. They had buy one, get one 50% off of her book. So I was like, ka-ching, getting more, because it's the perfect way to just like forget your world and relax a bit with, you know, something completely
different. And that's kind of nicely how this came about, wasn't it? Because you and I were talking about, you know, I can't remember. I must have said something and about geopolitically what's going on and this and that and all the stuff. And you said to me, you should chill this evening and read this book that I'm reading because it's just nice entertainment, a thriller that will let you disconnect and not keep your head too active. And you were absolutely right. It was really good.
By the way, just quickly before we go, I have to tell you, speaking of you getting scared, there was an incident.
Speaking of me getting scared, we were not speaking of me getting scared.
I
jumped slightly from it. Go on. I mean, it was really little. I don't even know if I swore, come to think of it. I think I was perfectly restrained.
Oh, yeah. No, so anyway, on one of these flights in the past few days, it was dark and I went into the galley to go to the toilet. Everyone knows there's like closets by the where the cabin ends before the galley kind of thing. So the crew are often there getting something from their bag or whatever they're doing on the side. So you just have to step past them to go to the toilet. So this closet happened to be right behind the curtain. So it's dark in the cabin and I open the curtain to go to the toilet And I just say, excuse me, because there's this little crew member there getting something from her bag. And the way she shrieked when she saw me, like me, this giant white guy, and she's crouching down on the floor. I was like, you would have thought she's seen a ghost, you know? I was like, oh my God, I'm so
she
sorry.
She did.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the ghost of Gothenburg Pass, goodness me, yeah. on a night flight, you know, domestically somewhere within Asia. Yeah. Terrifying.
Exactly. I almost thought you had sent her to lower my ego a bit.
No, I'm glad that happened. That's just a very natural universe message.
Natural reaction to seeing me.
Yeah, I think that's how we met. Look, with that, let's wrap up, and I will join you and the listeners same time, same place next week. I wish you a wonderful rest of your day.
You too. Take care, Alex. Take care, everyone. We will see you next week on air. Bye-bye.
See you later.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue one last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue one last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.